Oh, it's fine.
No, I'm sorry.
I just realized you were talking.
We're just making conversation. No,
you sure?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. All right. Is that, we have a quorum, right?
Yes.
What?
Pledge. Yes, you do.
Oh, we'll do the pledge. Okay. Pledge's up there. Mary wants to do a pledge. In honor of 9/11, I think that's appropriate.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to thank everybody for coming, and we'll start with the minutes to the meeting. They were pretty long from last month's meeting, so Tracy found a little error on one.
Yeah.
And everybody else all right with the minutes? Four down. I thought they were excellent points.
Yeah, they were.
Thank you. Really good, as always. So do I have a motion to accept the minutes?
To accept.
Second?
Second.
So do I roll? Okay, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Cool. Carried. Okay, I know we've got Tim. Ken, do you want to speak on something, too?
Is no, just so in the meeting.
Okay, so we're going to let Tim. Is that all right, Tim?
Sure.
Get you out of here on this nice day.
Sure.
And thanks for coming.
He's got his motorcycle,
I know, he's got his motorcycle.
Yeah, it's a beautiful ride down on 213.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm here to answer any questions about the budget. We submitted it to this committee several weeks ago. Just to remind you how our process works, is after our August meeting, I usually hand deliver it to the county executive office of the legislature the day after that meeting. And we wait for any comments from those two parties. And then at the September meeting, we set a public hearing for you in the middle of October. And assuming there's no issues at the public meeting, then we finalize the budget in October's meeting. So shortly after the meeting on the 28th, well, actually the next day, I'll be sending letters out to all the supervisors, City of Kingston, and also to all of our haulers, informing them of what the new rates are going to be proposed, and informing them when the public hearing is going to be. So the only two rate increases we have this year, I think we have a really good budget. This is the first. Take care, Ken. The MSW C&D tipping fee, which is the largest, obviously the largest fee that you can see, this budget goes through the way it's proposed. This will be the fourth consecutive year we have not raised the tipping fee for 85% of our users by volume, and we have not raised the tipping fee for three consecutive years for 100% of our users. So I think that's pretty good. We've kept everything flat. The increases over the past few years that have happened primarily on the town end, where we were severely deficient in. And again, so the last piece of that puzzle for the towns is this year the tipping fee is going to rise from $62 a pool to $75, which is actually $2 less than what was told to them a year ago. And the reason for that rise is because four towns did not sign on with the agency, those being Marbletown, City of Kingston, Ulster, and Saugerties. And the impact of those to try to break even is it's a matter of economy of scale. So with that economy of scale, you lose quite a bit. And so the tipping fee did increase. We sent them a letter, them, the towns, when we were going through the process of putting the contracts together, telling them that it doesn't look like all towns are going to sign on. At that time, we didn't know how many were going to sign on. I think when the letter actually went out, we had 11 out of the 19. And we thought the tipping fee was going to be someplace in the neighborhood of $77 a pull, but we weren't sure. But we did give the towns an out if they wanted to not sign on. We actually picked up four towns since that letter went out. So our final analysis is about $75 a pull. So
for those towns, the municipalities that didn't sign on, do they have private? I think Ulster, right? Ulster does it themselves.
Ulster,
right?
And City Kingston does it themselves, and Saugerties and Marbletown, they have a third party.
Okay. And since you're both here, did you just get a better? Did their towns just get better bids? You know?
I don't think so. There was a history with Marbletown and the RA. Our Marbletown supervisor
Mike, when flow control was implemented, he just took it upon himself to, he thought he was representing all the towns and fighting the RA and criticizing Tim, criticizing Leon and the board, and he was really very unprofessional and I thought abusive. I've met with him once or twice with you. He was just, and in order to save face, he couldn't sign on with the RA because then it would have made him look like he was. I mean, Leon got letters from supervisors saying, you know, Mike Warren doesn't speak for us. So I've heard they're in a huge deficit, but, you know, Mike hasn't said anything.
For Saugerties? Did Saugerties get a better bid? Do you know?
But Saugerties is 2-10, right?
I don't know.
Woodstock and Shandaken.
Yes, like 3, right? Isn't that
3? It's 3, right. Yeah.
But even one transfer station, but they service 3 times.
Right.
They're only open 2 days a week.
Yeah, they cut way back.
And
Watertown
did too. Because they can't afford it.
They went from 5 days down to 2. Okay. I can tell you that, you know, knowing what the rates are, and I don't know specifically what their deals were in Watertown, but I know generally, when you look at the general rates, I can tell you that I don't think anybody's going to undercut us. Yeah. Even if somebody fell out of the pool, there's no way.
Right.
I just don't see it. Because I know what the industry is asking, mm-hmm. and I know how many pools we pull out of these towns. And look.
Do if I wait?
They'll do it. Well,
Saugerties does.
Yeah. So Saugerties, when they bring it to us, we bill Saugerties.
Okay.
So
by weight.
Yes, everything's done by weight.
But they don't take it in with weight.
But they're third parties charging them for a pull, which is what we do too.
Yeah.
But our pull charges, I think, are very reasonable. See, the advantage I have is I don't have to make a profit.
Right.
All I have to do is break even. So
that's
all I got to do. So I could usually be pretty good. And even at $75, going from 62 to 75, I don't anticipate there any being blowback because they're already anticipating 77. And that's the letter that went out a year ago. So if we cut it back to 75, it'll be all right.
And can I ask another question?
Then,
I saw the news article about the furniture purchase.
Yes.
It's interesting. But I was just curious, have you gotten other pushback since the article? Or, I mean, I know that it's specific about a $4,000 table or something.
I haven't gotten any pushback. Mm-hmm. I did get phone calls of people laughing.
Okay.
Because they thought it was hilarious that it made the news.
Slow news.
It was kind of a funny.
You know, the county buys furniture all the time. College buys furniture all the time.
Yeah.
And I bought it off state contract. I mean, the furniture is so bad. A lot of the furniture we bought from used furniture place. A lot of it, believe it or not, we got out of the trash. When it came in, there was a good chair. We'd take it out and put it in the office.
Yeah.
And I know, like, the recycling coordinator, she uses duct tape to keep the drawers closed, so they just keep coming because they're broken.
Right.
And nothing matches. You know, it's like, it looks like everything was put together in a hodgepodge. So
a year ago, it was.
It looks like it came out of a garage sale. So a year ago, I talked to the board, and the board at that time, they agreed this office needs to be redone because the painting needed to be done. There was holes in the walls. The carpets in the boardroom were all stained. So people come with muddy boots and so forth. And it looked like a disaster. So I said to the board last year when we were doing the capital plan, I said, look, we should put $20,000 aside to paint the place. I could have our own guys paint it. The carpet's not going to be much, and I'll buy some furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And the board said, at that time, they said, absolutely, get this place looking somewhat professional. So they approved the capital plan, so it was budgeted for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then this new board, they agreed to move ahead with it. We already did the painting, we already did the carpets. This new board agreed to it again. That's the article you saw. So yeah, get the furniture order and get everything matching and make it look somewhat professional. So I thought it was kind of a crazy article. I went home to my wife that night and I told her about it. She goes, you're kidding me, they're writing an article. She goes, if that's the only thing that's going on in the RRA, you're doing pretty good. If they have to write about furniture.
Yeah.
You know, so, but the other charge we're going to have too is the pool charge and the single stream.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start charging for single stream now. The single stream rates have been anywhere over the past year. From about negative $10 a ton to positive $10 a ton. So it's hanging around that zero mark for the most part. I don't know what the exact average is, but you can figure it's probably around zero, give or take. But that, when I say negative 10, we had to pay $10 a ton to get rid of it. And it's been as high as $10 a ton for us to get rid of it, you know, to sell it. I've seen it about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I've seen it as high as 15. That's the highest I've ever seen it. And I think, as you know, at the beginning of this year, I got a very scary phone call from one of the brokers saying that they may just pull out completely. They got rid of their second and third shifts. They were down to one shift, and they only needed enough material to process themselves, and they were feeding themselves. They didn't need any third party. If they pulled out, I didn't know what I was going to do. But they ended up not pulling out. We settled on zero tipping. While they still kept taking it from us. And we're running 5-6 traffic trailers a day. We're at our limit. Matter of fact, the markets are so bad right now that some of the big haulers who have their own plants, they're not even feeding their own plants anymore. They're bringing it to us. And I received a phone call from one of the big haulers about a month ago saying, we want to start bringing it to you. There's another one of the big haulers that wasn't bringing it to us before because they don't want to feed their own plant anymore. It's just not worth anything. So because it was a zero tipping fee, they said, we want to bring it to you. And I'm already at my capacity. You know, permit-wise and operationally-wise, as those trucks are coming in, I'm loading it as fast as I can to get it out. And I have to keep my eye on my PEC permit, too, because there's limitations on that. So I told them I can't take anymore. I'm not going to max it out. So looking at all that, I sat down with our controller, ran some numbers, and we figured $20 a ton is probably pretty good. Now, is that going to, over the course of the next year, is that going to allow us to break even? It could go either way. It's probably going to be pretty close. I think that's probably a pretty good number. But you know, again, you're dealing with commodities. You know, I don't know what the Dow Jones is going to do a year from now. You just can't anticipate those things. The only thing I can get back is I attend conferences and I hear talk to brokers about what's going on in international markets. So, but that's another one. I do have, if you're interested, I thought about this. I'll print this out real quick. I want to pass this around. I thought this was an interesting grab. I asked the agency controller to put this together a few months ago. So it's probably about 4 months old. But I found that there's some key highlight dates in there that I just thought was interesting. The revenues from the agency. Now, this is only revenues. This doesn't take into account fuel, employee time, wear and tear machines, and purchase of new machines and so forth. But you can see exactly what's happened over the course of the 9 years.
And which soldier do you see there in a second?
They bring it to us. Now, that's a good point.
That was one of their issues.
They're bringing it to us all as single speed now. So there was, so what happens, the agency took a two-fold hit, if you think of it this way. We were generating revenue on the dual stream, and then when the municipalities and the private sector, it wasn't just them, pulled out and started, instead of giving us dual stream, gave us single stream, not only did we lose that revenue we were getting on the dual stream, but now we got a product that cost us money to get rid of.
So it was a two-fold hit. Before, you had good quality, yes, with how it was separated out.
With the dual stream, because I could process it in our plant because we have a dual stream plant. And that plant, we actually produce a really good product, and the brokers that we deal with know that. So we're not a big player, so I don't have a lot of buying power. We're kind of a small player in the grand scheme of things. But our quality is good, so I can usually get rid of it and usually make a little bit of money on it. So, but the single stream is, it is what it is.
But that's what Socrates thought. But they were making money, that they were giving them quality,
right,
and making money on them. Not right, taking into, you know, account that you had to sit on stuff, sometimes you couldn't get rid of it, yeah, you know, so, but... You know.
And when the markets drop, they drop. You know, we were trying to plan. I have enough warehouse space. We have to make a business decision on when we're going to sell. And we know what the peaks are, what the valleys are. And we just got to keep an eye on the Dow. I keep an eye on talking to brokers, talking to my peers across the state. What are you experiencing over in the western part of the state, you know, as far as pricing is concerned? So I try to use all this to decide, are we going to sell? Are we not going to sell? Do we have enough warehouse space? Now, sometimes I hold on to it long enough where it becomes a safety hazard. You know, these bales are stacked too high and we got to get rid of it. I don't want anybody getting hurt. But I will hold on to it when we feel that the market's up where about where it should be. Call the brokers, get it out of here, and still have to sell it.
And just for clarification purposes, all the single stream is going to be charged, whether it's coming from municipality or the private sector.
Correct.
Okay, that's great.
If everybody's... It's
being treated equally as a commodity. Right. Doesn't matter the source.
Everybody's being treated equally now.
That's
great. You know, the days of people getting special deals and favors and rates
for all the two-tier system.
That's all gone. It doesn't matter if you're private. You know, the way I look at it, because we operate like this, like an authority should, like the thruway authority, mm-hmm, everybody gets charged a toll when they go through. Even the state police have to pay tolls on the thruway. And the way I look at it is we're no different. So, you know, we treat everybody, so we provide a service. And if you want, now, with that being said, the only thing that's flow controlled in this county, and I know you're all aware of this, is the MSW. Mm-hmm. If they don't if they're not happy, whether it be the municipality or the private sector, if they don't like the $20 a ton, they can take it wherever they want.
But they cannot throw it into the MSW stream.
No.
Correct.
They have to still recycle it.
But they can, you know, like if the municipality has their own trucks, or even if they don't, if they have their own trucks, instead of driving it to us, they could drive it directly to Beacon and load it down there. And if they get, and if they deliver it, they might get $20 a ton being paid for it. You know, we're having it picked up, so.
That may take, if you find that the private sector and the municipalities stop delivering the single stream to you because of the fee, which I think is, it's obviously allowable and perfectly fine, I think it's going to require, on the agency's part, a certain amount of diligence just to confirm that it's actually still being recycled, because that is the law.
Right.
And the agency is the authority over enforcement. So you want to know that it's not just finding its way back into the MSW stream, because it's converted.
And the nice thing about having flow control on MSW is I will know if it'll end up in a bit, because all of a sudden I'll see loads starting to come in.
Right.
You know, if there wasn't flow control on MSW, it can go leave and go to Orange County and I would never know it.
Right.
But because it's coming into either New Paltz or Ulster, I can see it on the tip of our pulse and we get a huge load.
You hope that it's coming. I mean, someone could evade, right?
And they could sneak out, and that's why I have a compliance officer before. He hides in the bushes at 4 o'clock in the morning with a video camera. So,
has anybody been fined yet?
Yes. Yes, several haulers have. On the southern part of the county. And you know what? They came in line. One, it took a couple of, took a few times. Now they're actually doing really well. Like, we can't catch them on anything. Another one was just recently. It was his first time. So we called them in with our attorney, and we fined them, and they seem to be doing fine now. So there was something else about this thing I wanted to mention.
I mean, I know that's the rules, but to me it makes no sense for somebody in Marlboro or Denning or worse thing, to drive to Kingston, especially Marlboro and down that end, when you can just go to the town of Newburgh, a quarter of a mile, say you're driving to Kingston to get rid of your garbage.
Right.
You know, you're wasting how many hundreds of more gallons of fuel a week driving it to Kingston. So we say we care about the environment, but yet we don't mind these big trucks burning thousands of gallons extra a year.
Pollute
the environment just because we want their money in trash.
It isn't just about money, though. It's
yes,
about no.
Flow control is all about money.
No, it isn't.
It
though.
Is
it's about it. It's about control of the system.
No, it's
I mean the problem is we don't have flow control on everything, and we don't have a full working system. But it is about the whole system, not just about the money. I mean, as Tim just said,
you
without flow control, there would be no ability for the agency to hold anyone accountable. In terms of enforcement, you wouldn't know.
Well, if there was no flow control, there is no enforcement.
But then how would you know if they were following the... How would you know if a load wasn't contaminated with recyclables? Because you wouldn't see it. It wouldn't cross your tipping floor. It would leave the system. You wouldn't know if...
I understand. I just don't... I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think people are recycling more now because of flow control? Because they're worried they're going to get in trouble? If somebody never recycled and they're 60 years old and flow control was implemented, do you think they're recycling because of flow control?
Well, that's up to the agency.
Not a million years.
That's up to the agency
not
to hold them accountable. It's up to the agency to look at the tipping floor and if
I know what you're
there's
saying.
A contaminated load to say, hey, this load is contaminated with recyclables and it needs to be addressed.
Saying.
I mean, that's all in the
I know, we're not going to get into it, but I remember you, Tracy, at a meeting saying if flow control, if things don't change with our whole system in the next few years, I'm not supporting flow control because I supported it to fix the system. But flow control is just a money thing. That's all
no,
it is.
No, and I do feel
not
like
Tim's fault.
One
I'm not getting
no,
Tim
I agree.
It.
But I still feel like it's
me,
one part of the whole system which we're working on in the solid
I can't
waste
comprehend
management improvement commission.
Somebody in the town of Marlboro having to drive all the way to Kingston when they can dump it 4 miles away in the town of Newburgh. To me, it just boggles my mind how much more we're polluting the environment and hurting the environment. So flow control isn't for somebody up in Denning has to go to Kingston when they could just go over to Sullivan County. It doesn't make to me. It doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
just in the Solid Waste Management Improvement Commission. There has been a lot of consideration about regionalization.
It's
That's great.
And so, you know, I don't know how this will all play itself out, but I just want to say that we're
because
looking
that could
at
reduce
Hawaii.
Rates too.
Yeah.
We're looking at it. That's what I'm saying. It's a work.
And especially with Orange County, they don't really have a system. I mean, they're doing what we're doing is exporting, and I don't even know if they have a recycling coordinator, let alone a recycling coordinator in every municipality like we do. So it's I think it would be we'd have to figure out how to patch a regional plan together, given that there's different systems in place already. But that's part of what the Solid Waste Management Improvement Commission is to sort out.
If I can just speak to, you know, when I took over the agency, we were strangling with debt. You know, there's a lot of old debt that I'm trying to get rid of. And unfortunately, we're down to, I think, around about 10 million, a little less, 9 to 10 million, so we're in that ballpark.
Wow, that's great.
When I took over, we were at 24 million, so we were able to pay a lot of that down. Now, if the debt were gone today, if I didn't have any debt, my debt service is about 20% of that tipping fee. That's a huge number. Mm-hmm. I would be down around about 82 a ton if I had no debt.
But then you could get Red Hook and all those other areas back, right?
Well, what's interesting about that, and if you had it at $82 a ton, you could actually, I'm not going to get a political fee.
No.
That's not my job. But you could theoretically get rid of flow control, legislative flow, because there's three different types of flow control.
Right.
There's legislative, there's economic, and there's contractual. If you got rid of legislative flow control at $82 a ton, economic flow control would take over. Because I know at $82 a ton, they're going to come to you.
Right.
You don't have to legislate it because the tipping fee is so cheap. It'd be hard for others to compete to that. That's what if the debt were gone tomorrow, I would be down in that range. So
but 10 million is great, considering where we were.
We'll have the next debt payment due March 1st, and that'll be another 2 million.
That's amazing.
Now, unfortunately, the way the debt is structured, and I can bring this in for you if you ever want to see it, but the way the debt is structured is that there's some bonds that will be dropping off, which is really nice. However, there's some other bonds that actually will triple or quadruple. And the finance people did it that way, so there was the same amount of debt payment being done every year. So that debt payment, while some are dropping off,
sure,
others are shooting up quite drastically. So I don't, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to drop the tipping fee much. But in 2025, that last was a balloon payment of $4 million, which we've already got about over $3 million of that tucked away. So when that final debt payment is done, it's done.
That's great.
I can say, I hesitate doing this in public meeting, but my controller came into me the other day and said, I was just running some numbers in my office over the next, because about 80% of our numbers are contractually related.
Right.
So I can predict out a year or two in advance. And our controller sat down, and he goes, I just sat down just for fun, and I was just playing with some of the numbers over the next couple of years. And it looks like, you know, we've kept the tipping fee the same for 4 years. He goes, I think we'll be able to do it at least for the next two, after the 17th. So going into 18 and 19, we'll probably still stay flat. So if you can keep it flat for 7 or 8 years and not raise the tipping fee. Now, just so you know, too, and there's good, I think we're doing a good job financial planning, is at the end of 19, now our MSW contract is up. We're going to go out for another 5-year contract for the MSW disposal. Now, what's going to happen at that time, I don't know, because that's a big, big number. But if we tuck away enough in reserves, which we have probably 18% in reserves, if we tuck away enough that if the tipping fees do go up, I think we'll be able to soften the blow to everybody, everybody in the county, municipalities and private sector, by not having to raise the tipping fees right away. Because I'll have enough in reserves that I can work off those reserves
right,
and slowly
right.
bring it up if I have to after 2020.
That's great. No, that's great, Tim.
Thank you for this, too.
Yeah.
No, sure. I was interested to ask our controller about that a few months ago. I was interested in what the revenue is like.
It's interesting to kind of plug in the conversion to single stream against what was happening in the market. You know, I wonder what would happen if all of that was still coming in dual stream.
Right. And that's why I asked Mike when he did it. I said, do me a favor, put in the highlights when everybody starts switching over to single stream so I can see it.
Because it's big. I mean, those are big, right there, big, big drops.
And, you know, the municipalities that did, now City Kings will be very difficult, but the other three municipalities that did switch over to single stream, they could always switch back to dual. We had the supervisors meeting at the agency back in June. I reached out to Carl Chipman and said, you know, do you want to, we did that one other time about 2 years ago, and I'll give everybody a tour of the place and know where the recycling is going. So we had it in June. And I mentioned to him back then, I said, look, I'm just going to give you a heads up that we're probably going to start charging for single stream. I don't know what the number is going to be yet, but we're going to have to charge something because we're bleeding too much from that particular part of the business. And it was actually Mike Horn who spoke up and said, what if I go back to dual stream? I said, well, it's zero. I'm not going to raise the tipping. I'm not going to have any tipping. I'm going to keep that at zero for dual stream because I can use that. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go back to dual stream, yeah, that's fine. I mean, you can do whatever you want to you. So that's another option for them, too.
Well,
it was easy doing
that anyway. Yeah. I don't know.
Used to have three bins, and separate them. And yeah. It wasn't that hard. So, anybody have any questions?
No, you covered everything, good.
Thanks, Tim. Good. Get home safe. Can I excuse?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
going to
be a nice ride on the way home. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
You'll have a good night now.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. All right, you want to get these resolutions?
Is Mike Darcy not coming?
I left him two messages. Yeah. He never called me back, so maybe he had another commitment tonight. Yeah, so we'll try to get him on for next month.
And he was reporting to us in REPCO in what capacity?
NYSERDA.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what he called and asked if he could come, and he told me he could.
I went to high school.
He was going to call Rich directly.
He's a Roundup guy.
Yeah, he didn't get it. As well as Glenn, he didn't even get a phone number. He said, I'll just call Rich directly.
Yeah, I called him. He called me. I called him back twice. I left him a message, not yesterday, Saturday. No, Friday I left a message. I keep thinking today's Tuesday. I left a message Friday. I said, you're welcome to come to the meeting. We're going to put you on the agenda.
Okay.
And I left a message Thursday, too. I didn't call him today because I figured he's either coming or he's not.
Right.
And he never called me back. Okay, so want to do the resolutions quick? Are you okay, Tom, waiting a couple minutes?
Yeah,
okay.
Working on it.
Okay, cool. Okay, resolution 387, confirming appointment of a member to the Environmental Management Council.
I'll move it.
Second. Any discussion? Judith from the town of Rochester, your district, Ron. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Carried, 5-0. Okay, resolution 388, requesting the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and the New York Thruway Authority assure opportunities for meaningful public and municipal participation in the scoping process for the CEQA review of the Pilgrim Pipeline.
I'll move it. One second.
Okay. Can I ask you a question? Does anybody really think they're not going to do a thorough review process for everybody? I mean, do they ever not?
I guess it's
they always extend deadlines and have public hearings. And
I know one of the concerns that folks have, and we actually submitted, I'm not sure who all signed the letter, but earlier this year, because there was a lot of concerns about the New York State Thruway being one of the co-lead agency, because the authority actually could financially profit a great deal from the pipeline project. So I think the concern for the extra call for oversight and public is because of that previous failed attempt to get them not to be co-lead. That's my understanding.
And I think it kind of goes above and beyond the normal minimum by asking for a 90-day public comment period. But for me, more importantly, and I didn't read this until Jen submitted it, but the public information sessions be held in every county in the pipeline pathway, which that's not something that normally happens out of hand. So just, and I think those are always helpful.
It's fine.
And we could write them a letter. I think these are changes.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, is there a motion?
I moved it.
Oh, moved it.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
I'd like my name to be added to this. Thank you.
Okay, $3.99.
You can add my name too.
I'll move it.
Okay.
Second. I on the subject, I brought up to Jennifer before she left. I would like to recommend that we amend this resolution. I'd like to move to amend to change the first resolve to a whereas. It does not read as a resolve to me. And I think it was just an oversight, and Jen said that's fine. Thank you for the amendment.
Anything else on this one? I would like to, maybe at some point, it seems like every resolution this committee passes is opposing something. I'd like us to support stuff, and, you know, let's do a resolution supporting wind wheels up on Bel Air Mountain or on state property, solar panels on. I was up 2 weeks ago at a wedding at Jiminy Peak on the top of the mountain, and you look out, and there's about 9 huge windmills, and then you look down off the mountain, and there's these huge grids of solar panels. And you know what? Everybody was taking pictures of them and thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure if somebody proposed that, we'd be against that too, somewhere in the county doing it. I mean, it's just we oppose everything in this committee. We don't support a thing.
I would write a resolution supporting solar installation.
It's crazy. I mean, we want to be against everything. We want to be against everything, but there's no alternative. I mean, I'd love not to have to use oil or put fuel in my house ever, or use, you know, electricity generated by power plants, but everybody's against everything in the alternative to try to change it. I mean, it gets so. I've been here a long time, and it just seems like this is the committee of no. Everything we do is we vote against. We oppose things. We've never once supported the Save the Lakes. You know, we've never once supported the Bel Air Park. Anything. We've never supported anything.
We have supported things. We've supported. Speaking of Save the Lakes, we support Save the Ridge. We supported saving Chattahee Lake.
I'm not talking about saving, but I'm just talking about that's like being against something. Saving something is being against something that's planned use there.
Maybe.
Like when you're against saving Bel Air, you're against Dean Gitter's project. When you're saving the lakes, you're against the project to tear a hotel down and build another hotel.
Right.
I'm just saying we're always, it just seems like it's just, and I've been on this committee for 15, maybe 2 years I wasn't on it, but I've been on it a long time, and we've never brought things forward that we support. We're always against things. I don't know. To me, it doesn't seem to ever pan out.
I remember, what year was that, Manna, when we passed the legislation supporting the the development, the solar development, the business communities.
But you had Village Ellenville.
EIC.
Yeah, you had the Village of Ellenville that wanted to sign on to it, that we wouldn't let them sign on to it. You know?
That's not true.
Well, it is true. The Village of Ellenville can't participate in this program.
They can do it themselves.
Well, we have all the county attorneys and the resources to do it, but then you want your own village to do it.
We don't have the authority. They are a village, so they have to do it. They can sign on to EIC.
We could have done it to the village. They could have done it. If we would have taken over their taxes, then they would have been eligible just like every other town in the county would have been. All I'm saying is, it just, everything comes with, it just gets old. And we memorialize the resolution. I don't know. I like to be positive, but it's, every month it's against things. That's all I'm saying. And nobody's got any solutions. But
when we get to the next topic, I'll offer a few.
Okay, that's fair. That makes me feel good.
Okay, good.
Okay, there's a motion and second. Any other discussion?
That's for the amendment.
On the amendment. Yeah, that should be. She was fine with that.
Yeah.
Okay, on the amendment, changing the first resolve to a whereas. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, on the resolution as amended. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Why am I arguing with you?
Can you add me to this one as well?
I'd like to be added to this one too.
Me too.
All right. Now we're to section. New business. We'll talk about the plastic bag legislation.
About the resolution to support the use of reusable bags.
There you go. No, that's good. I mean,
important first.
No, I'm going to start to think of how to rephrase things.
It's just like...
I hear you.
But read every resolution this committee's passed in the last 10 years.
I'm going to find you.
80% of them are... 80% of them are opposed. Not 80%. But every memorializing resolution out of this committee is opposing something. In the last 10, 15 years. Guaranteed.
That's kind of the nature of the beast, though, since we're dealing with the environment.
Yeah, it's protect, you know, working to protect the environment often... But we don't have to argue. We're going to find other ways. We're going to find other ways to say it to make you happy, as Tom has pointed out. Okay, let's focus on the reusable bag legislation.
Tracy, what floor are you on?
Yeah, if I could. So in the packet I circulated, Tom's joined us again from Marbletown's ETC. Tom put together for Marbletown a plastic bag law frequently asked questions, just for everyone to. Peruse it for a long time, and it's very helpful. And then I asked, Jordan couldn't be here today, but I asked her to provide two pieces or examples of legislation. She gave me two, which I included. One is the city of San Jose, California, and one is Los Angeles, County of Los Angeles. They're in the back. So some of the things that, and she also provided me with some information in terms of San Jose, they reduced, they had a lot of markers for measuring success once the law was passed. At the time, they were estimating that they were spending over $3 million annually to clean out stormwater drains. So they reduced by 89% the trash and litter from plastic bags and the stormwater drains once this was adopted. They reduced plastic bag trash in the creeks and rivers by 60% and 59% in the city streets. And they increased reusable bag use by 62%. So, and 60% is a good marker. Los Angeles exceeds the normal, the 60% marker in terms of increase in reusable bags, and found that after this ordinance, they had a 95% reduction in single-use plastic bags. You'll see that both pieces of legislation have a record-keeping component so that they can follow, so that the counties can follow. I mean, some of what I think... And we don't have to go into incredible detail but right now, but some of what I think we need to decide before I submit something for us to actually vote on is, one, what facilities we want to cover. Because there's differences across the country on what's covered. If you look at San Jose... they have no retail establishment, period. So it covers
supermarkets.
It covers supermarkets, but any commercial establishment, which is not limited to clothing, food, personal items, et cetera. So it's all retail. In Los Angeles, they do something, if you look, a little bit different, and that's they focus it more on... They're really trying to. Their definition of a store is. Well, I'll just read it to because you haven't had a long time to review. They have a full line self service retail store with a gross annual sales of $2 million or more that sells a line of dry grocery, canned goods, or non food items and perishable items. That's one. Two, a store of at least 10,000 square feet that generates sales or use tax, et cetera, et cetera, and has a pharmacy. Or three, a drugstore, pharmacy, supermarket, grocery store, convenience food store, food mart, or other entity engaged basically in food sales. So my read of that is what they're leaving out are the mom and pops. Yeah. Unless it's a food. It's, if it's a mom-and-pop retail store. Food store, yes. But they're leaving out a mom-and-pop clothing store.
Where, I'm missing, might have missed in the way, would a gas station fall under in that?
They did $2 million in sales.
They did $2 million in sales.
But
a gas station that had a convenience, I mean, often gas stations are convenience
that's
food
all, stores, that curious,
stores
like,
that,
co- the,
that sell milk, so they'd be covered. Yes, they'd
that.
Be covered in this. In both these examples, which I could pull different examples, in both these examples, you see that restaurants, for example, are not included. So there are places that everything's included, but I think we need to determine what we want to tackle. That's one question, which we should talk about. And then the other, which this comes on, Rich, your comments to me after the last meeting, in both these examples, they exempt, they have some different programs, but they exempt people who are on special food supplemental programs. So in for women, infants, and children, and supplemental food programs. And
that's a tough one, though, because what does a person say? I'm on welfare, so I don't...
Well, they're paying with food stamps.
If you're paying, with your EBT card.
But nowadays, aren't they debit cards? You don't even know what people are paying with them.
You would... Yeah, I mean, it's a card.
I mean, they would have to identify, but, I mean...
Right, but so a lot of times now, the person, the associate behind the counter, you just run your debit card, put your three-digit PIN.
They know because not everything's covered.
Yeah, they do know he's not a...
Well, unless the person gets only covered things.
Right.
Then they wouldn't.
Which probably doesn't happen too often, though.
So we can answer that question, and we can... NASA, which just passed the law, does not, I believe, or Jordan said to me, she does not think that NASA put in any exemption, so everyone's covered. But, again, that's for our discussion. So those are two of the main topics that I think we need to tackle, and then based on what I'm hearing at this committee, then I can go back and I'll look at more legislation and I'll finesse something to have a specific discussion about. Not to mention the last thing would be what the fee is, which that's an easy, you know,
if there's a fee,
what the fee is, 5 cents, 10 cents. Right. I think the thing that we realize is, based on examples and Jordan's testimony, and Tom's experience talking to people in Marbletown, is that it sounds easy to get behind the concept of there being no fee, because people like the in general the concept of a ban, just that it's easier, simpler. But with no fee, it can hurt the retailer, because then they're buying more expensive bags, and It might not, if we really examine what we're trying to do, we are trying to stop single-use plastic bags, but at the same time, I don't think we want to just promote an alternative that we know is environmentally responsible or sustainable. We want to promote reusable. We don't want to promote paper as the alternative.
And that would be with the 5 cent fee going back to the retailer.
Absolutely.
There is one strong argument for the fees. And that is lawsuits that just ban plastic are much likely to draw lawsuits from the Grocers Association. Grocers Association tends to support just straight up fees, and they're not necessarily as happy with bans with a fee, but they like them a lot better than straight up bans. And given history, Ulster probably would have to take this through the courts if it were just a plastic bag ban.
Somebody would take the county to court, you think?
The Grocers Association.
The Grocers Association.
I would think they're all would buy into it. Even if there's no thing, everybody knows it's the way it's going.
They bought into the other two options,
yeah.
Not just the ban.
Yeah, the ban only is what they don't
because
it costs them
the
money.
But
for how many, when I was growing up, you never got a plastic bag. You got paper bags. And you know what? Those plastic bags are so cheap nowadays.
Well, exactly. But plastic bags cost retailers about a cent and a half, and paper bags cost them about 10 cents.
Wow.
So that's why they don't like it.
Okay. But they give you the option.
They do give you the option, but, you know, some do.
Okay.
A lot of them
do
buy
plastic.
Okay. One thing about
minimizing plastic bags and where there is a single use going to paper is if we do end up composting our municipal solid waste. One of the biggest problems they have in Delaware County when they're, you know, they shred everything and try to remove what's not compostable, and most of what they get is plastic bags. If they went to biodegradable bags and made that required, or, you know, or paper, they already reduced their waste stream by 80%, is it? Mm-hmm. And they could even increase that, because most of what's in the waste stream, after they take out the bulky items and the recyclables, that doesn't go through the composting process is plastic bags.
And
so,
fabric, which is
so
also
this
recycled.
But I think we're talking about two different things, because I don't think anybody disputes taking plastic bags out of the,
The system.
Single use. I don't think anybody argues that. I think the 10 cents or 5 cents or 3 cents, that's where the argument's gonna come in. Mm-hmm. That's where I think not here, I'm thinking of the full legislature, that's where the argument's gonna come in. Do we wanna pass something that, I mean, we can put it in there. I have no problem putting it in there and see where it goes.
But what do you think is gonna be
if there is a sticking point, to me that would be it. I think if you took plastic bags out and said you have to use paper or encourage it to reusable, I can't imagine, maybe a couple people vote against it, but I can't imagine it failing. If you say it's going to be 10 cents each, I think you're going to have some people that might say no.
Except
I'm not speaking for myself.
No,
I'm
no,
just
I hear you.
I've been here long.
I mean, the thing that concerns me is that might be, for lack of a better term, that might be the uninformed reaction, because what I imagine happening after, if what we introduce is just a ban, which I'm open to the discussion, what I imagine happening after is the people who you think are fine with it hearing from the, you know, the grocers and the stores and everyone saying this is going to hit us and it's going to cost us a lot of money offer.
Listen,
you know,
eventually we're going to have a public hearing. It's going to be a local law. We're going to hear the retailers. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear different people coming in, and I mean, we should invite the Retail Association to the next meeting.
Well, I'd like to get something crafted too, so that we have, so we're talking about something specific, even if we're then going to amend it. You know what I mean? I'm open to that.
My instinct would be a fee that cover like this. So what? I'm sorry, you said the number for the average cost of plastic bags for a retailer.
Oh, average cost of plastic bags is about a penny and a half.
So I mean, like to me, like I don't. I mean. Would be the main goal would be to cover retailer cost
for the alternative, which is the paper.
Yeah, would be to cover. I mean, that's just my gut instinct is to be as make it as neutral as possible for the business side of it, and that would be the most logical way to come to a number, and then sell that number to those who may be on the fence. You know, if you can say that this number will get your business A in your district will be neutral.
But the other thing to figure out that neutral number, on the face of it, you say, well, if a paper bag is the main alternative and it's 10 cents a bag, then to be neutral it's 10 cents. But in fact, we know from demonstrated experience that basically, at the minimum, they're going to see a 60% reduction in plastic bag use, which is an expense.
What do you mean 60%? It should be 100% because there's going to be no more plastic bags allowed to buy in the stores.
In single-use bags, right. So if it's 100%, if there's a ban,
And
if there's 100%, if you go that path, and
well,
if there's
100%, that's the path we're looking at, is
yes.
Banning the plastic altogether.
Yeah, I meant single use.
No, in terms of the people on
why
would you
TANF, and
I wouldn't even give why give me
you
option.
Nor have a problem
you,
with that. Yeah, you were, okay.
There's three possible paths. I don't think you can say it. So one path, ban plastic only, which is. Gives you pretty high reductions in plastic.
Yeah.
Some shifting to paper. Sometimes the problem with when you ban plastic is you have to define what's a reusable plastic bag. And there's been experience, like in Chicago, they did that, and a lot of retailers shifted to a thicker plastic bag that they gave away, which, of course, is exactly what we don't want.
Yeah. Right.
So, straight ban, first option. Second ban, straight fee. And that's where you get the 60 to 90% reductions, depending on how big the fee is.
Mm-hmm.
Option three is ban on thin plastic bags and a fee on everything else,
okay,
which gives you the highest reductions and the biggest reductions.
Sure, sure.
So those are the three options, I think.
Right, sorry.
Since you're talking about different options, you have different numbers.
But to that point, with the ban and the fee, you expect to see 100% reduction in the plastic bag, which is a cost savings to the retailer, which would have to be factored in to figure out. It's not just the 10 cents covering each bag, because now they have a savings of, they don't have to buy any more plastic bags. They're not allowed to buy any more plastic bags, period.
Right.
So,
and also I think consumers are used to, like, Sam's Club and Aldi's.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get bags there.
They don't have them. Right. They don't offer any.
I don't go to those stores.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to. They give you boxes.
But so I think that they
give you boxes.
They reuse the
boxes. Well, if there is boxes, otherwise
in between the registers, they just pile up all the boxes. Right?
Really?
Yeah. They recycle. I didn't know that.
Hmm.
That's smart.
Yeah.
In New Paltz, our local health food store does the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what do you think, Legislator Lapp?
In terms of the which question?
No. I'm sorry. I wasn't. That's my fault. I was asking Ron, because he hasn't said anything. I said, what did you have an opinion on it? So, but I was looking at you when I said it.
I agree with what Mary said. You go to Sam's Club or some of these other big chain warehouse stores, what they do is the containers, mostly cardboard, that the product shipped in is reused to send the product out of the door, which is cardboard, which is recyclable. You throw them in the containers and it goes mm-hmm. back through the process. Now, I don't know how effective that's going to be for, because Sam's and these big companies, they're bulk items that are served, like two or three things mm-hmm. of ketchup and so on. How are you going to regulate that in a grocery store where somebody, where somebody goes in and buys produce, you know, and then incidental, like aspirins or something like that from the pharmacy? It's just how do you control that
right.
so it's not rolling all over the parking lot when they go out?
Right.
That's my concern with it. Now, I agree with the plastic part of it. We have to do something eventually to stop the plastic from affecting the environment. But maybe like was discussed, like you do with these plastic bottle. If there's a 5 cent deposit on it, you bring it back to the store. Either you reuse it, you get your money back from your recyclable bag, you know, that could be an option.
If you bring a bag in, you don't get charged 5 cents or 10 cents or whatever.
Actually, well, price chopper gives you 5 cents back.
But that would give, my point is, that would give people the incentive to bring it back
if they know
they could get money on a deposit that they've left on a bag, like a bottle.
Mm-hmm. I would be interested. I can't imagine. I don't know that there's an example of that, but I'd be curious what the retailers would say, because people sometimes you shopping, you get 30 bags, or at the double bag, 60 bags.
Yeah, they double bag everything.
Yeah, they're going crazy. It's like tons of bags. So,
that's right. Yeah.
And I think it would work if you require a deposit on all those bags. I just think we'd have a tremendous push from the retail establishment not wanting to. There was a push from the retail establishment on the bigger bottle bill, not wanting to have to count 5 cents for every bag that's going out in order to get it, and then having to have someone stand and go through dirty plastic bags.
Yeah, well, when they come in like a package, like you scan the barcode, like they do with the regular bottles. You scan the barcode, you have a 6-pack of soda, whatever the price, 60 cents, 30 cents, whatever it may be. The same thing with a bag, you know, just a bulk bag. You have 10 bags. You scan it through; they're 5 cents a piece, you know. And then you're responsible to bring those bags back in. And if you don't, you don't get reimbursed for them. And then a lot of people are, money conscious, so I think it would be more apt if they bring it back in the store to use it than toss it in the garbage bill if they know they're paying for it.
Well, then they could have the option of paying more for paper if you're going to do that.
Do you know of any example where there's a bag fee?
Well, there are a couple things that are similar. I mean, the reusable bottle thing is very similar to a fee, except that there's no money when you come back. However, there are also lots of examples about getting paid to bring your reusable bag in. Whole Foods gives you 10 cents.
There
are a couple stores here could be like 2 or 3 cents. Now,
ShopRite gives you 5 cents.
Yeah, 5 cents. Now, the research on the incentive to bring a bag in, I put this in the fact, is unfortunately it doesn't affect behavior.
But that's different than charging for every bag. What Ron's saying.
But you can do both.
Is a charge for every bag that goes out the door. Every bag, not getting rid of plastic bags, charging for plastic bags and paper bags, and then giving money back when they come back.
I just make them more conscious. They're spending the money. They want it back. Not if this. Well, I forgot about the discount. The bag's laying home, or I tossed the bag out.
But I think getting it back, they might give you 5 bags, and you bring your bag, it all fits in the one bag, and you get a nickel, and you really would have gotten 5 bags.
Right. Now, the typically reusable bags, shoppers take more in each reusable bag than they do in the small one. I was actually reading a news story about somebody who objected to somebody's reusable bag law and saying they don't use the reusable bag because it was an older person, and they found retailers filled it up too much and they couldn't lift it.
Heavy.
I think it would be an option for the county to pursue to pass a minimum fee and a mandatory incentive for the use of reusable bag. You could, I think, while the incentive doesn't do anything, there is no research on whether a small fee plus small incentive might not have more effect than the small fee alone. And, of course, the incentive would be much more palatable to the voting public. There's no research on it. This is just an idea I came up with over going through various ideas in Marbletown.
What concerns me is the concept of still allowing the plastic bags, even with a fee, to be out there because we'd be breaking new ground and being
and
the only
the handle,
one.
And if the plastic handle breaks on it, you're going to get your money back on it, or you're not going to get it.
Yeah, it just seems like...
And a lot of them are going to make their way into
the
garbage.
We want to be done with plastic bags. And how do we do it most effectively in a way that, from my perspective, doesn't hurt the businesses, because I don't want to hurt the businesses, and doesn't shock the consumer, because habits can change over time, and I also want to...
Well, that's the key, is changing the habits.
Yeah.
That's the whole key to this, is to... As a six-year-old kid, if my parents went in the store with the bag, reusable bags, you would never think twice about it. It's just breaking
it's just
habits.
It's a process.
But
I also think allowing for... I think, Rich, last time you talked about it, when we talked about allowing for there still to be paper bags at a fee, it's like if all of a sudden, you run into the store and you've forgotten your bag, and as Ron said, you're carrying, remember, we're only talking about checkout bags, so if you have a 6 apples, they're in a plastic bag that you got
right there. Right.
You have a bottle of aspirin, and you have, and you don't have anything to put them in because you forgot, you have the option of paying the 5 or 10 cents or the dollar, because in most of this legislation, they ask or require that you sell reusable bags or the dollar, along with the promotion that you, I think, suggested last time, which I think is an amazing idea at the outset, us having, creating bags that educate the consumer about it as well, and that we circulate for free, which is an expense to the county, but I think it was a great idea. Yeah, of course we can. We're thinking positive. We're talking about positive things.
Right? Spending money.
It works for Blue Box.
But I was thinking, I wonder if there's some inexpensive way to do surveys in the county on a lot of subjects, including this, and to what the pulse of the community is.
Mm-hmm. I think most people are okay with no plastic.
But what I'm saying is, if there was a way for us to have concrete numbers for our particular community, it might carry more weight with legislator voting for or against it. The ones that are less likely to
Legislator Wayroom. How many legislators base their votes on facts and research since you've been here? I haven't seen it done too many times in my career here.
And also how much
it's usually
do you trust
like an emotional
surveys?
Thing, huh?
I mean,
well, that's true too.
I'm kidding.
But, there's just different things that you
I mean, you see that people are really,
because this is something that I brought up to a lot of people of different ages, and I really haven't run into anybody that was opposed to it.
Yeah, I get that positive feedback too.
My biggest concern is, like I said, it's the impact on it's the business and the business owners, especially when you get to that. I keep thinking in my head, obviously I'm supportive of this concept of just getting the number right, because, you know, in Woodstock we have some very, we don't have a large grocery store. We have a series of smaller grocery stores mm-hmm. that are owned by local residents.
Similar to your community.
You know, we don't, our closest grocery store is Kingston or Saugerties in terms of a chain grocery store, but we have a series of health food stores and markets. So it's just, you know, to me, that's, you know, my biggest concern. It's just what's the best way to actually accomplish the goal of changing the way people act in terms of recycling and bringing reusable bags, but also keeping it neutral for the businesses.
It would be interesting to know in your community, yeah. like, how many people are already doing that.
Yeah, so it's interesting, you know, what I did find when there was talk about, for that brief blip of talk of try a push to repeal the legislation you two authored with the styrofoam ban, I started going, like, just out of in my daily life, a lot of restaurants and even, like, delis in my area have already self-imposed that just mm-hmm. because they hated styrofoam so much. Yeah. But I don't know about that. Bags is a little bit different because it's such a...
No, but when we implemented that policy, yeah. the customer didn't have to pay it 3 cents for the
yeah, exactly.
cup mm-hmm. to use. Mm-hmm. Don't
get it. Yeah, but the business owner had to
pay it.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people would have been willing to pay it. Yeah. Consumers would have been willing to pay it.
Yeah, I know.
It's
a little different,
but
because
I'm just saying,
it's
definitely
going to
help.
It is different, to a degree. In answer to your question, Mary, I think we did do some polling in Marbletown. Not scientific, it was a volunteer response. We got about, we put it in the Bluestone Press mm-hmm. and distributed it at a couple talk shows, but a couple talks, but mostly it was from response to the Bluestone Press. And out of like 20 responses we got, we had about 4 who were opposed to the plastic bag ban. We also asked about a fee, and the balance was kind of lower, but the biggest response was non-response in terms of preference of the fee to a ban. But there was more opposition on the people who responded. It was about, I think it was 5 in favor, 45 against when we got to the fee. So, I mean, people don't like taking away their free stuff. And in terms of the people who don't like the ban, it was kind of interesting. We accepted responses by mail and by email. All of the people who didn't like the bans used mail. So you can figure something about the demographics from that.
Right. Or they didn't want to be
known. Or they didn't want to be known, exactly.
No. The email, actually, it was a web response. It wasn't email. It was a web response. It was anonymous. So all of them were anonymous.
Interesting.
Well, does anyone have thoughts both on the exemptions for people on food stamps and or the concept of what facilities we might consider covering? Do we want to stick with all retail? Do we want to be more like LA County and do all food retail and large scale retail or big business, meaning chains?
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, I don't. I'm open. I mean,
I just think with the food stamp thing, I think that's such a volatile situation anyway, to say that, you know, people on food stamps, this doesn't apply to, right?
Well, no, they're counting food stamps. We should put a...
What's that?
That was for fees.
It was for the fees.
The intent was don't hurt the poor.
Right.
The ban obviously applies to everybody because
right.
the supermarket's not going to stack bags for poor people.
I feel like I'm strangely in the mindset of that I'm more the goal is to educate people on a positive action. I mean, I don't think just because you are financially at a disadvantage doesn't mean you have, because it's not like if they perform a positive action, of using renewable bags, and we are planning on making renewable bags available. And even in long term, if they $1 down for the cost of a new bag instead of keep paying the 10 cents, I mean, this doesn't have to impact that. We're not mandating a cost here. We're giving an option. It's about choice. We talk about choices a lot when we talk about policy and personal responsibility and stuff. I mean, I think it seems, it just for some reason, doesn't seem necessary to exclude a socioeconomic class because we don't think they have the ability to make the right choice that's available to them.
I agree with you somewhat, but I will tell you there are people, and that it's a higher number than we, any of us would think, that when they go shopping for food with that EBT card, they don't have two nickels in their pocket. So then do you have an issue of them not being able to, you know, it's you owe 75 cents or because you're 70 cents because you have seven bags. Then what do they start doing? Putting food back on a shelf. They're getting in a taxi cab. And I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I'm turning it in my head as well.
I see people that can't change light bulbs. I got to put light bulbs in their house.
But maybe we're talking about giving away free bags, having some available in stores for people that don't have the money.
And that's even tougher because there's millionaires that are millionaries because they don't carry 20 cents in their... I don't know. But I don't disagree with you, John.
I'm turning it in my head, too. It was just like the one thing that was kind of in the back of my head.
But there's people literally have no money. Tom and Enron.
I actually totally agree with John. That's always been my thought. I think the reason the food stamp thing is in there is to make the bills easier to pass. I think there will be a group that's opposed to the bill because you're going to hurt the poor. That's one of the objections I've heard a lot. And basically, this is something you can do that's not really going to water down the bill much and make it easier to pass. I think that's also the reason for the exemption of certain types of stores. So my suggestion is don't exempt anybody and exempt the people who squeal the loudest.
People on public assistance, when they go to the store and they buy soda with deposit on them, what do they do? How do they pay for it? How do they pay for that nickel deposit on the bottle? Are they exempt or do they have to pay?
I don't think they take it out of their pocket.
So then it would come
they
out
do.
Of
their no,
it,
they do. Oh, they do.
It would,
they do.
It's really? All, it's added
oh, they do.
To
they
the
buy cigarettes.
It comes to that
and
into the total.
Deposit,
and you pay that yourself. Okay.
Yeah. Same thing if you buy cigarettes or none. I mean,
right.
You can't buy cigarettes.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah,
you have to pay for it.
You're right.
Okay. So then maybe it's not an issue. I know it is an issue at some point for people.
No, I think it is. I think because the last thing you want is that scenario. I mean, the last thing was that scenario that you painted, which is a very plausible scenario. But I think, you know, especially when you think about senior populations, and, you know, how do we get the bags to them? Certain things. I mean, there is some. I think there are socioeconomic
maybe
things. Give them to the taxi companies.
Time.
Buy bags and give them to the taxi
companies.
Maybe
the first time you use the card.
Hand to everybody.
Maybe there's a way to
stuff.
Track it with the card. And
well,
you get free bags the first time or whatever.
I will find out for
month.
Sure what happened with Nassau, but I'll let you know that in these two examples, in the Los Angeles County, the stores are required to provide free recyclable or reusable bags to people in that bracket. In San Jose, they say they may provide those participating customers with a one or more recycled bag at no cost with an end date. You know, so it's like it goes out a year after the. It's the only exemption, but it's time limited exemption. So it gives. I'm assuming it gives a longer period of
just to get used
public
to
education. Yeah. So and
there's laws out there. I mean, there's different things.
I'm open. I want this to be something that we as a committee can agree on and put out together. So
yeah.
I feel like whatever
feel
the committee.
People are just. I don't. Maybe it's my district, but they're just all about people are getting free things and their events, social service thing, and where they might not really be against the plastic bag ban, they are against that, so they would come out against the whole thing.
They're
not the baby. They're against people. A lot of people feel like people are getting.
on social services don't deserve it, they're lazy, blah, 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 whatever.
So they would be opposed to
the plastic bag ban if they there's an exemption for them. Like, they'll feel like it's another, here's another thing they're getting.
Okay. I just want to say that we had a similar conversation about the blue boxes and mandating recycling.
Back in the day, the blue boxes that were circulated.
And they were given out for free from the transfer stations and for the people who had a hauling service by their haulers. And, you know, they told us how many customers and made them available. And at the time, there was a lot of discussion about exemptions. And we decided there would be no exemptions, that it would apply to everyone. And one day, I was campaigning many years ago, and I went to somebody's house. She was blind. She was in a wheelchair. She had a can of tuna cat food on the table, and she had no cat. I'm trying to tell you how bleak her situation was. And she had to recycle. You know, I thought to myself, oh, my God. She had to recycle. Whoever helped her with everything else had to make sure that she put her recyclables out just like everyone else. And that's an extreme example, but I'm just saying that we felt that if you're trying to change behavior, that it's better to just do it across the board for the businesses, for the residents, and there really were, and we debated exceptions. So, you know, I like the idea of maybe a little bit of a leeway for a training period, exceptions, I think might give the wrong message.
Yeah.
Can I just say something?
I think legislative lap is really good point. Like, so, I mean, I don't know. We don't have any retail experts. I'm not really sure how the systems within the computers work. But just if you're on, if you have an EBT card and you buy, I believe, a plastic container of orange juice would qualify under EBT.
100%, yeah.
And so that's going to have a 5-cent deposit.
If they don't have quality water, say they buy a thing of water. This doesn't.
Because they don't, some people might have because they don't have good enough tap water. You can buy something with a 5-cent deposit on an EBT card. It gets run through this, gets added to the receipt. There's no way to make a plastic of that 10-cent fee added to the receipt through the EBT card. It is still coming out. I mean, they'd still, have the personal responsibility because it's budget. It's still coming out of the already allotted budget on that EBT card.
I think that's another reason why they elected not address
with
that.
With the card, soda, you can't buy soda.
Okay, but
they're not buying anything with the card that has a deposit at this point.
I thought bottled water, maybe.
Well, water. They can't buy water with it.
Yeah, maybe they can.
I think that problem solves itself. Not a EBT card qualified thing.
Right.
And then the retailer's like, I can't charge for this here.
Guys have to work that out.
The card doesn't pay the deposit.
Can I make a quick point? I'll support what we're going to do, whatever we come up with, but I think one thing we have to be careful of, if there is an issue, you know, there will be people on the fence, so if you say, well, it's going to be every business in Ulster County, that may give three people reason to vote against it. And then if you say, well, people on social services are going to pay the 10%, we decided not to give any breaks, then you might have two or three other people on the fence that might say, well, this gives me reason to vote against it. So I think we need to be careful. I mean, they're all valid points, but as we all know, I had a good resolution 2 months ago that some people supported in committee and then voted against on the Florida legislature because there was one little point they didn't like about it, you know, even though they might have liked the whole rest of the resolution. Well, you told me you didn't like it because it wasn't a complete ban. So there you go. So I lost the vote because of one little, you know, an issue. Yeah, no, so sure. You're going to start losing people. The more restrictive you make it, the more people you're going to start losing.
Well,
so,
that's why I want to at least have us figure what.
That's why we need to. Not
because we have the ability to pass it because we owe that coach, but at the end of the day, we have to get to 12.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do us anything to talk about it for forever and not be able to figure
well,
out.
On a reusable bag issue, you could make it free for everybody for a certain period of time, and then after, say, 3 months, now you're responsible and put signs up so everybody's aware, so there is no excuse. You've been notified, duly notified.
And that's a great point, too. You can maybe save for 6 months.
Do you mean recyclable? You mean like paper bags?
The reusable. Like we're talking about, I guess.
They can be expensive.
You could, it could be a giant cost to the retailers to have to give away that many.
Well, that would permanent plastic ban, free paper bags for 6 months. After 6 months, you pay 10 cents a bag or 5 cents a bag. After 6 months, you get a freebie. Going to be notified every time you get a paper bag. You got 3 months left. After the 3 months, you're not.
And that's for the recycling.
I do agree with Legislative Lab, and that there is going to have to be an educational
big one.
Part of it. There is going to, but and that is going to cut in terms of. And I agree with Legislative Parodies. Concept of a bulk of county bags being available at the onset of this. So I think it would be important, because I know from going to other committees, when you say you don't include specific financial breakdown of costs, that I think that's another angle, even though it's not always at least a strong estimate of what we're looking at in terms of cost of the county without to make it effective.
Well, I think we can break that up, because I think you have a great – I think yours – I'm sorry.
No, Tom is going to speak.
I'm just adding points. All of these example laws any of us have seen have a six-month phase-in period where they don't take effect before that educational moment.
Yeah.
Which you were suggesting. That's what I was going
to
say.
I haven't looked through all of them. Do they include any fiscal impact?
No, I didn't, not that I saw, but what I was going to just say to that point, because I love Legislator Parody's idea about the county bags, because I think it does. I mean, it's twofold. One, it's us putting something behind our mouth is. Like, we're investing in the idea, just like manna with the blue things. And two, it's the most amazing educational component we could have, because we could, as someone suggested, have the contest for kids to, you know, do the bag, you know, have the artwork be by local kids, and it, you know, comes out with a splash. But in terms of the fee, my fast thought would be, we at the same time introduce two pieces of legislation. One is the law, and one is supporting and funding the reusable bags, with the fiscal impact to the reusable bags.
Yeah, we should have
same
positive.
Time, boom.
We should have
and that's totally yeah. positive. And I think, to Tom's point, we don't call this the plastic bag ban. We call it supporting a law, supporting the use of reusable bags.
That's
what we're doing in banning plastic bags.
It's a bigger... I just learned that we spend $5,000 annually on tickets.
On what?
Tick kits. $5,000 annually. So I think you could buy a lot of bags with that.
Done.
I mean, not that we would replace it, but I'm just saying, like,
that's a lot of money.
But you imagine how many, and that's a much more delicate. They get assembled at cost, but they have tweezers. My guess is that I'm just saying, in comparison, imagine if we had a similar. I don't think it would be an astronomical fee to have an adequate
supply
to, you know, in good faith effort to make them available.
How many do you think we need to print?
I'm gonna see if I can find out the cost.
I'm gonna let Mary go in the time.
Maybe we could bring the chains to the table. I mean, they see this coming up the pike. Maybe they can. We could partner with them.
Have their names on the bags. I mean, there's lots of ways we can do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something we talked about, the tickets, because we were talking about expanding our Lyme outreach, and we were talking about...
There's less ticks this year because of the drought.
Oh, yeah.
This year they're down dramatically.
And actually, I think it was Legislative Affiglio talked about if we need to expand, if we want to expand the program, what I guess other places have done is gotten more public-private partnerships in terms of outreach.
I think we can come up with the money. Honestly, I think there's some room in the budget. I think we can.
But also with the tick things, I would imagine after you give out so many, everybody already has them.
Yeah, they lose them, they forget them.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I think, but they're also part of an awareness. I mean,
I like that,
it's good to have
the
kit when you need it, but it's also an awareness part of, like, giving it to someone when they're at, like, a public trail and they're going out, and then they're, like, actually thinking about checking themselves.
I wake up at 2 in the morning, there's one right there. I don't get up and get the kit. I yank the thing off.
Do you
save
it?
You need to throw it out. I'm throwing a toilet bowl or a sink.
On the point of fiscal impact, there are a couple other fiscal impacts which are positive to bring in here. First of all, you should have hit Tim up because he has a large fiscal impact of dealing with these bags. This is the most difficult type of waste for him to deal with because it flies away, especially when it gets mixed in recycling. That's what breaks recycling all the time, as I'm sure Mona can tell you. The other fiscal impact, and this is from San Jose. San Jose reduced plastic bag litter by 89% in the storm drain system, and 60% in creeks and rivers, 59% in city streets with their 10-cent charge. Cleaning that up, it has fiscal impacts. And so when you write the fiscal impact, that definitely should be there.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they estimated in San Jose that they were spending $3 million annually on cleaning up.
Wow. A little different with us, we're more
for
rural,
sure.
But still, it's still.
But I think we, I mean,
still,
we hear about it, just the trash you see in the river and the trees.
Yeah, I'm curious. I would be curious even to, like, have input from the head of DPW for Kingston.
Yeah.
I mean, as a biggest, like,
and maybe we can bring some of those people in to the table and just see what they're.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this. I mean, I think we've had a pretty good discussion. I mean,
I have something to work off.
Yeah, that's right. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with the different. I mean, you know what? And if you come to an issue about the cost of the bags, just write.
I'll just write
5 cents, 10 cents, 6 month implementation, 3 month implementation, and then we can kind of.
And we'll work through it.
And
then
we can work through each piece and come.
So, do you want for next month? We don't submit it. We have a working session again. So I'm not. It won't be. I'll bring something that we're gonna mark and work on.
It's better to come up with something that everybody could live with.
I think that would be great.
I think it's really important the separate budget
for the bags, which I'm gonna look into. You said Don's looking into too, so I'll talk to Don.
Don starts to look at that. We also talked once about signs to remind people. Mm-hmm.
Have you heard any larger organizations?
The cost is not gigantic. One idea we hit on Marbletown, we haven't implemented this yet, is also going around, when you give away bags, there's an opportunity for branding on the bag, too. So you can go around to retailers and do a group buy for a reduced rate, and if they get their brand on this reduced rate bag, they'll chip something in. I did do some research into cost of bags, just to give you some idea. The lowest end, cheapest reusable plastic bags you can get of decent size will cost in bulk 60 to 80 cents.
That's
if you want to get a nice, these are plastic, but they're thick and they're reusable. The sort of you want a nice canvas bag, you're looking at probably $2.
I think the plastic's fine. I mean,
this is like in the 10,000. You can buy 10,000, 20,000 bags.
If you bought 20,000,
that'd be $2.
$2.
This is branded,
etc.
You might be able to get. There were some cotton ones in the 150 range. I mean, again, you know, the nicer they are.
Yeah. You get what you pay for.
What do you want to make?
I know which
USA?
Ones I love, which I'll bring in some of the examples of the ones I use all the time. They're bigger, and they're plastic, and they're like a woven plastic that's
pretty sturdy.
And they're super sturdy. I've used them for a long time.
I use the 31.
Okay, well, we can do. We'll talk
we'll
about it. Thanks
them,
for the time. I mean, Tom just gave us a pretty good difference.
Okay. I'll get on it.
I would have never thought as low as 60 or 80 cents.
Yeah, I mean.
But these are like the ones that, say, Hanford gives away on Thanksgiving for the turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Those are reusable.
Yeah.
Which, and you may already have some. For, you know,
In New Jersey, the A&P chain, which I don't know if they're up here, but okay, so the A&P chain in New Jersey sells very large reusable plastic bags for 99 cents.
Wow.
And they're super sturdy, and they have double handles. They have the long and the short, so you can hold them like this, or you can put them over your shoulder.
Yeah. Listen, that's a great look. We'll definitely
find something. Okay. I'll get something and I'll circulate
it
back.
Maybe we'll talk or...
Yeah, you and I will talk and I'll get it back.
Maybe one day we'll...
Okay.
When is your next meeting?
Well, that's the issue. Okay. You want to just go jump to that? We can jump to that now. Is that all right?
Okay. Fine with me.
Our next scheduled meeting is Columbus Day.
Opposite of close.
Yeah, so we're obviously...
We were looking at October 5th, which is a Wednesday. The week it would be like a week earlier. I think day of Rosh Hashanah. Mm.
Does that mean the 11th is the first day of Rosh Hashanah?
At midnight.
Oh,
sunset,
okay.
Yeah. Sunset, goes sunset to sunset. But.
And we still have ways and means and caucus that day.
I can do. I mean, I'm
jobless. Both work for me.
I generally prefer to keep things in... Well, I'd take the 13th over the 5th, but I can make either work. Like, I like to...
As long as either stay at the same time.
I can't do the 5th. I don't know if you care, but...
No, we want you here.
Yeah, most Jordan might be able to. She knows more than I do.
So...
Second Tuesday is
caucus. The 11th is caucus?
11th is caucus, yeah.
And the 18th is session, right?
And what were we talking about at my meeting, the 12th?
We're talking about the 13th.
No, what?
Right, the 10th is Columbus Day,
Your meeting is going to be the 17th.
Yeah.
The 17th, right.
Well, why don't we do it the 17th?
Because it's also laws and
Right. The 13th not good for you, Rich?
Oh, the government inefficiency.
13th
is
fine for me.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be on 11 to 7 at work that week, but I there's always guys who want to take it, so I'll give it away.
I don't know if the college is available those days either. We may have to
Okay.
If the college
do you
isn't
wanna, can
available
we do the 13th as the first choice and then the 5th as the second?
We'll do 13th first choice, 5th second.
Okay, and you want
to... Tom, is that all right? I mean, if...
Well, I can't make it to Jordan, maybe.
We'll reach out to Jordan then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on a plane.
I'll reach out to
and I'm sure
you're on what, a plane?
I'm on a plane.
Oh, good for
so
you.
It's just not...
I'm pretty sure we could do the 13th at the... If the college isn't available at the county in the library.
That's fine.
Yeah, well, so okay. If the county's full, we can talk about the community center. We could talk about...
Well, the county, she thinks the county's good.
Well,
this
as long as it is good,
I'm not sure if this is
okay.
available or not yet. There was... what date? The 13th
is our...
I think that it wasn't available. Maybe.
Which one?
Danielle had the list. I should have taken
for here?
For here, yeah.
Well, what if we went to...
The
county building.
Marble Town Road.
It might be.
Or county building. Yeah.
We'll find something.
It might be. There was 2 dates that were in room 208.
Is there another room here we can meet?
That's what the other...
Vanderlyn Hall? I mean, there's a...
That's probably at 208. Yeah, 208.
Would you prefer to meet on campus if we can get space on campus?
Well, that's
I don't care.
Pain for you and you.
It doesn't really matter.
Three of you.
It's easier.
I mean, for Ron and I, it's easier.
And for us,
and Tracy's the same.
For me, it's the same.
It doesn't really matter to me.
Why don't we... Let's find a spot the 13th. If we can't find a spot the 13th, then we'll just try to do the 5th.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that all right?
For the 13th,
That's great. And I'll reach out to Jordan.
And we'll let you know if it's not here. You know, we'll let you know.
Yeah. And it's going to be what time? Because there's no pre-meeting.
What's
so are we
going to
definitely say 6?
Well, Jonathan's got to ride from Albany.
Yeah, but I mean, as long as it stays at 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll call it solid 6. Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Good.
Okay, so tentatively the 13th on 6 p.m.
Okay, and you'll let us know when.
That's a Thursday?
That's a Thursday.
Sunday and Friday.
Can we go back to Climate Smart?
Yeah, we're going to.
Okay.
You know what happened? Somebody said Wednesday night.
Tom
was the one who knows
the game.
Because he
didn't
get out of here. He doesn't have to stick around.
Thank you,
Tom. Thanks for your help, and thanks for coming again.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to go to... is there any more new business?
No, I'm just going to grab a lot more.
Okay. Okay. Old business,
let's say green or climate smart.
Okay, I'm going to go over a few things and then Jonathan can fill in if I skip over. But I think that one of the main things that is coming down the pike that involves the Climate Smart Committee is this Clean Energy Communities Initiative, where they're promoting a variety of actions that range from making sure your building codes, that your code enforcement officer is trained in green building code or energy efficiency codes, to whether or not you're certified as a Climate Smart Committee, charging stations, I mean, various community solar, there's a whole lot of action. And you have to, in order to be eligible for clean energy community funding, you have to, your municipality has to be involved in four of them. And I think looking at them, Ulster County and the City of Kingston are already, probably have more than four that they're already doing. But I made a spreadsheet, which I circulated, and we've been filling it in, and I can share that with you. It's filled in pretty much for Ulster County, and I think we might be eligible for the funding that is being overseen or distributed or managed by the Hudson Valley Regional Council. So for all of the communities in the Mid-Hudson Regional Economic Development Council, which is, you know, the six river cities plus Sullivan County. And then we're coordinating with the EMC and the Department of the Environment on outreach to get more communities to sign the Climate Smart Pledge. As far as our mandate to think about what the county itself can do, the group wants to focus on really drilling down on two buildings this year, which is the county office building, both for potential for renewables or solar and energy efficiency. We did look at all of the buildings, and the report that Siemens and others have done for recommendations for energy efficiency, that they wanted to take two communities a year, two county buildings a year, and they picked the law enforcement center and the county office building. So we'll be talking both to the sheriff and to, you know, Ken Crennel and Amanda to give us an update on that. I think there's going to be an electric vehicle meetup coming up. And in the county office building parking lot, are you aware of that? I'm pretty sure that's where it is. I'm supposed to show up for it. I'm sorry, I don't have the more details, but I'll make that available, and Fawn can share it. A lot of discussion about siting and zoning. Siting for solar and the zoning issues around that. There are a few communities that have issued moratoriums to try to protect their community and ensure that as we scale up solar that it's done well and properly. But then there's, you know, some pushback because people have projects they're ready to move forward on, and they might be in, I think Gardner is one of the communities.
Yeah, can I ask a question? Or can I say, so I talked to one of our town board members this weekend just at an event, because I heard that they were considering a moratorium, and the way it was explained to me first, I was concerned that it was a moratorium based on the size of the property, not the project. You know, so in other words, if you're doing even on your house, but you have 100 acres, you fall into the moratorium because it's 100 acres. Then it was clarified that, no, it's the size of the project.
Yeah.
But
some things that got me thinking, and I was going to even put them in touch with you, if that's okay,
yeah.
is that I explained that the outreach about this, and my family was contacted regarding one of our properties by one of those speculative solar, because
yeah.
the property happens to be very, it's in Orange County, but it happens to be very near a power connection, and was offered, I want to say, close to $30,000 a year
yes.
to just to host solar. Now we turned them down because it's a long story, but I don't know how other people react as they get these letters offering tens of thousands
of dollars.
Why would you say no? Well, it's on...
Not why would you say no, but why would you pass a law that the person can't?
Well, no, this is what, and this is what I wanted to get to. So when, as I talked to our town board member, what he said is, well, we want to, I said, you do realize that a lot of this outreach about these large-scale projects was about educating and protecting the property owner
right.
so that they
right.
could
right.
protect
that's
their own, so that
that's
they could,
okay, that's,
right, so that they could protect their own rights. So they knew what they were getting into. But meanwhile, my impression of what the our town is undertaking is that they're thinking, oh, we need to protect the town. And I said to this board member, I said, you do realize that there are already, you know, he said, well, we have to do environmental impact statements. I said, all that happens as a part of a large-scale
yeah.
project anyway. And he said, well, we want to make sure that, for example, it looks good from the road. And I said, well, that's something that's debatable. I think, like other members,
yeah.
that it's beautiful from the road.
You know, yeah. you know,
but the point is, I think that some people might be getting off track from
right.
the original message, which was about educating
yeah.
the landowner.
And that's
about
been the only
rights.
Discussion the climate smart committee said. I don't even think the word that concept has even come up.
Because when someone says to me a solar moratorium, I got very nervous.
This discussion has been educating, because there have been instances in other places where companies have
been predatory with small print.
In terms of,
but
especially
for
like in
here.
Agricultural.
But Dennis Doyle was here, and he talked about, in this meeting, about, you know, some lands are rocky, farmlands are rocky, so it's okay to put them there. Other ones are really good soil, so we don't want them there.
Yep.
So when Dennis Doyle spoke here, it was about being able to tell farmers or people, no, you can't do it because that land should be used for corn, or that land should be used for hay.
Yeah.
So that discussion did happen, you know.
I don't recall.
I'm just talking about within a climate smart.
Okay, that's good then. That's
yeah.
good then.
Just because what our function is to work with municipalities.
Right. No, that's fine.
And
we don't have
does your committee reach out to municipalities, or
can I put
Gardner in contact with you?
Yeah, I have because the committee and the county ultimately sponsored back in April, I think, an event called Exercising Caution When Scaling Up Solar.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just caution. That was all, like, people should know how to protect their property rights. Whether they decide they want to use prime farmland or marginal farmland
mm-hmm.
should be up to them,
mm-hmm.
not up to a developer. Here's $30,000. Now you have no more say. That was the question. And we addressed that, and because we did, I put together a packet, so if people have questions, and I also know a couple lawyers that have some expertise that can help them read their proposal and help them, if they do want to move forward, negotiate language that will protect their property rights. So
because there were some issues of
retroactive taxing and
changing.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Just not really,
yes.
but going back where you want the different communities to sign on to the Climate Smart?
Yes.
Is there anything in there about buying, say, solar energy or from within your own county or community? You know, buying renewable energy is good, and say we want Ulster County 50% renewable energy by the year 2020. But is there anything in there that says we're going to buy it from farms in Ulster County, or we're going to buy it from in the borders of Ulster County? We're not going to buy it from Syracuse. We're not going to buy it from Albany.
Right.
We're not going to buy it from Binghamton. We have to buy 50%. To me, that's putting your money where your mouth is.
That's one of the things Gardner's considering in its moratorium. They're considering putting legislation in that says, in the large scale solar farms, if if built in Gardner, that the power has to stay local. I don't know how they do that.
I don't know how you could possibly do it, because if it's not used on site, it goes on to the grid.
Right, right.
And then the New York ISO and Central Hudson decide.
It all becomes
math. The math.
That's all it becomes is math. Say, well, Ulster County, we're generating, 1 billion kilowatts, and Ulster County is going to use 500.
Your point is so well taken, because
to me, I'm just at the point, like, I get frustrated with all these resolutions. When's the point when we're going to stand up and say, we're going to do it ourselves? Or we're going to, it's always about no doing this, no doing that, we can't do this. When are we going to say, we can do it, we're going to do it right, and I don't know, I just...
Well, when the county exec says, we're buying 100% renewable energy.
It's not coming from our own county.
I think your point is well taken that we should start distinguishing what is actually generated in the county. But a couple other quick things.
For a resolution.
There, just in terms, I'm all for that. and maybe that's something we should talk about in the committee is, the governor.
Give you more work either.
Well, the governor has made a goal of 50% renewable energy by 2030, and the Public Service Commission approved that on August 1st by 2030. But we could set a goal for this county. I mean, that's something
that
to
would
think
be a positive
about.
Resolution.
Setting our own goals.
Goals are positive.
But when they pass that, the same day they pass that, they pass the nuclear subsidy that this county, most of the legislators, opposed. It went from originally, in the first version that the Public Service Commission issued, it was going to be estimated to be about $3.5 billion over 12 years. The version they approved on August 1st is somewhere between $8 and $10 billion. So, just so you know, there are
Just Western New York. That's Fitzpatrick and.
To support Fitzpatrick initially, but there are two other reactors.
Two others, but that doesn't
Ginna
even include
and,
Indian Point.
Ginna and Nine Mile Point.
Yeah, Nine Mile Point.
Nine Mile Point.
But that's
it. Also include now it includes Indian Point. In a strange way, because they didn't
want... Well, eventually it's going to go into the red, I think they're predicting.
Yeah. And I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I do want to let you know that petitions for rehearing have been filed, and ultimately there may be an Article 78. There's going to be a challenge to this. But right now we're moving along. Exelon is going ahead and buying Fitzpatrick from Entergy. There's discussions about who gets the decommissioning funds. And so, and the thing about it is it was flipped through. The first version had 6 days of public comment, and the second version had 5 days of public comment. And the reason it was pushed through so quickly was that in order for Exelon to buy Fitzpatrick and decide, we'll buy it with the subsidies, and Entergy wants to get rid of it, they were already planning to close it down because it wasn't profitable. They need lead time to order the radioactive fuel to keep it going. And that was the main reason that rather than have a really transparent, open process, that it was rushed through. But that may be part of their undoing, because there are... what do they call it? State administrative proceedings, SAPA, that say you should have 45 days, and they didn't follow that. I don't know. That's up to the lawyers. But there are challenges. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that Laura Pettit has resigned from the municipal appointment to the committee. And... she's really focused on the solid waste stuff. That's her thing, and energy is not so much. And I don't blame her. It's amazingly complex. But Betta Broad
is the mayor of Kingston, I think, is going to nominate Betta, and Betta is willing to do it. So I just want to give you a heads up. They're in the process of writing to Ken Ronk and copying you. And so that may be ready for next month. And I
thank you.
Well, anything
thank
else that
I would just add that what I've found more recently is now is that we still have a lot of seats we can fill, and so we still have a lot of municipalities that could be participating, especially because now it's a lot different than, like, even when I first heard about the Climate Smart Committee, it's even recently is that the fact that now there's skin in the game, there's funding on the table. They've used this mechanism of Climate Smart Committees as a means of dispersing grant funding, and they've made it so that communities that have already been at doing things can still get credit. So it's actually a rare opportunity. So, like, for example, like town of Hurley, who we share, they don't have a representative. I mean, there is some work. You need an environmental group locally that's going to be able to oversee, but they could get a lot, like the rail trail. If you look through what they're marking as criteria to earn credits to be a climate smart group, like the rail trail project that Hurley has would count retroactively towards those credits, the fact that they have a really good up-to-date transfer facility, they would get credits, you know, things like that, which I think all of a sudden, you know, and there's a good bit of money starting to become available. So if you talk to if you meet environmental groups, and we should actually pass around a roster, kind of like where we are in terms of, like Woodstock, for example, for years has had an appointed member to Climate Smart, but during that time there was no money in the game, so there was no real incentive to, we were doing things, but we weren't actually doing the groundwork with an assigned task force to oversee it, and we're starting to talk about that. But now that there's money on the table that we could be getting for things like additional solar projects or stuff like that, we're now talking about it is worth that extra effort and, you know, trying to or just drum up, you know, some folks, you know, and some communities like Woodstock, we have an environmental commission that's already appointed by the town board. Some communities will run it through that commission.
A subcommittee
of that committee. Like, you know, they'll get, you know, X amount of members on the environmental commission that already exists to oversee that. Because it's some overseeing.
Sometimes struggle getting anybody, right?
I mean, I know in Woodstock we were pretty active, but we still had months with nothing happening. So I think.
Can you circulate a roster of who already, when you talk about trying to get more municipalities signed up, but which municipalities are?
I just finalized a list before I left of which communities have EMCs.
And
they have an EMCs.
And ECCs.
They can be on our county EMC, and we can appoint an at-large member from that.
Okay.
So I had to go through back through all the resolutions about how people were appointed, and some of it was obsolete, and so we're doing another appointment this month. So I finally have that list, and I have, like, highlighted all the places where there can be seats. Like, Denning doesn't have an EMC. When I called him, the town clerk laughed. She goes, I'm the EMC. Because we have 5 streetlights. I did the survey of the streetlights. So, she did this. They've done a lot of things there, but they don't have an EMC.
But maybe we could find out which communities are already climate smarts as well, and which communities have ECCs.
Could I
yeah, that would be good. David Holtman is the chair of EMC.
I'm the chair of the county EMC. We're already working on this fall a seminar to encourage.
Dave, I can't quite hear you.
I'm sorry. We're already working on a seminar for this fall, which we're going to invite town supervisors, town boards, EMC members, et cetera, legislators, too, with regard to Climate Smart, because of the same reasons that have been mentioned here. There's funding available now, there's grant money available. Every community can at least sign up. So that was one thing I wanted to be aware of. The second thing is we're trying to make a big effort right now to, there's some towns that have EMCs or CACs but aren't attending regular meetings. We're working on that. And then the next phase of that would be to try to go to towns that do not have any environmental councils and see whether we can.
I just want to be sure that you or Cindy or somebody from the EMC can come to our next meeting, which is the 26th, I think. It's the fourth Monday at the county building at 7 o'clock. And
it's the Climate Smart Committee.
The Climate Smart, the County Climate Smart Committee, so that the EMC and the county can, and the Climate Smart Committee, because it's sort of partially your charge and partially our charge, and we felt that if we coordinate, that would work a lot better. And I didn't have your email to reach out to you. We had actually thought we were going to do that in August, but if we could do that in September, that would be great. And if not, let's find a time that works for both committees to have a joint meeting. And maybe before you leave, if you can write down your email, we can work it out by email.
Great. On what date is that meeting that you'd like somebody to attend?
The 26th, Monday the 26th.
26th.
At 7 o'clock.
At 7 o'clock at the county building.
If you give me your email, I will send you their agenda.
Which do you want
to?
Thank you.
The only person I couldn't find was Joe Leone. Is he still on?
No.
Joe Leone? I couldn't find when he was appointed.
No.
We got a list from Amanda Laval, but it didn't jive with the
list. Yeah, because I'd asked for that list, right.
And we're doing a new program. It's very exciting for appointments. We'll track appointments, how they get appointed, when they get appointed. It'll send us a notice that we have openings. It should be
very modern, right, too?
Yeah, we'll be encouraging people. We'll put a list, like, if you're interested in getting involved, there's openings on these committees.
Oh, that's great.
Things like that. And how to apply online and...
Very
20th
century. On that issue of the governor and 50% by 30, there was a lot of discussion about whether it had to be generated in New York State or could be purchased from other states. And I think it came out it had to be generated in New York State. So we might think about something even more aggressive for Ulster County if it makes sense.
Well, I think that's a good suggestion.
And so some of these are positive things. I think the last thing I just want to say is that there's a little bit of tension in the environmental community between people who are concerned about climate change and burning more fossil fuel and people who are concerned about aging nuclear facilities and the danger they represent. And this whole Tier 3 nuclear subsidy kind of brought that to a head. In California, what they did at Diablo Canyon, which is their last nuclear plant, is they all brought everybody together, including the unions that represent the workers in the plant, the owner of the plant, PG&E, the Public Service Commission, or Public Utility Commission, the local elected officials, the environmental groups, and they went through a facilitated process, and they came out with a plan. You know, you guys know how I love collaborations. They came out with a plan that protects the workers, the older workers that have been there a long time are retained because of their institutional memory. The newer workers or workers that don't have such critical jobs are retrained and placed. So it's retain, retrain, and place. They're protecting the workers. They have a plan to replace the energy generated by Diablo Canyon with 100% renewable energy in 9 years. And so they have a planned phase out that is orderly, practical, and happening, starting to happen now. Because they have a date, they have
benchmarks.
Yeah, benchmarks. And
how did they facilitate that happening?
NRDC and Friends of the Earth were very proactive. And the other thing is, which is different than New York, so we have to do it a little differently here. In California, they never deregulated. So the Public Utility Commission has authority over the nuclear power plants because they never deregulated. In New York, because we deregulated, our Public Service Commission has authority over the utilities and the ESCOs But the merchant power generators, there's some regulations from FERC, from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, but they are not directly regulated. But because Diablo Canyon is such an amazing model, I've been communicating with the people at PACE Energy and Environment Clinic or Center, and the people that brokered the Diablo Canyon deal, NRDC and Friends of the Earth, the Nature Conservancy, and a bunch of others, first to get the environmental groups working together, because even though we may disagree on how to get there, everyone wants to see us rapidly transition to a renewable energy economy. And then when we can get on the same page to make a recommendation for a facilitated process with the unions, you know, a neutral union like IBEW, and then the union that represents the plant workers at Indian Point and these other facilities, bring all the stakeholders together and make a...
It's really the only way you can do it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they get put in a corner and then nobody's listening to what anybody else has said and nothing...
And they think that we're after their jobs. And that's, you know, what I would like... And it's called a just transition. They use the word just transition because the workers are part of the planning of it.
Right.
And... And they're committing to 100% renewables so that we're not burning more fossil fuel. So I don't know. This is a little bit outside of the Climate Smart Committee.
But positive.
It's positive.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to share that.
And that's great. I mean, imagine if
that's the way
that
it's going to get done.
Things will, you know.
And the last thing I'm going to send Fawn and ask her to send it to the Climate Smart Committee and to this committee. Somebody actually it was Ken Panza who sent it to me today. And by the way, Ken and I tend to have different perspectives on this. But we have agreed to disagree and to learn from each other because he asked very challenging questions. And I appreciate that because if we're going to solve it, it has to be something that is bulletproof, you know, that really is going to work. And he sent around this thing from Stanford University, and this guy is imagining what our future is going to look like. And he uses an example of a picture of, I think let's just say Broadway in New York City, but some picture of a city, and the streets are filled with horses and carts. And I think 13 years, and there's one car. This was Henry Ford when the car was introduced, and something like 13 years later, the streets are filled with cars and there's one horse. And he's saying, you know, with the way battery storage is ramping up and all these things are changing so rapidly, we almost can't, it's hard to plan for the future because we can barely envision the technological changes that are going to be taking place, but we still have to do the best we can with what we know now. So it's just so interesting. It's an hour long. I don't know whether anybody wants to sit through it, but it's really mind-expanding to think about what this future is going to be with sensors and storage. So a lot of the waste of electricity, the fact that we have to have above peak demand a large reserve, a lot of that is because we don't have storage. And so we have to have these nuclear facilities sort of idling, waiting for peak demand, and 20% above peak, projected peak demand. All of that will change when there's storage and sensors, and it's not a matter of remembering to turn the light off or shut off your computer, but then it'll be remembered for you. So I'll send that around just because it was so mind-blowing. Thank you for bearing with us.
Do you Dave, you mind coming to the next meeting, our environmental meeting, and you can just speak about what the EMC's been doing and just give us an update?
And that's... And we'll put you on the agenda?
And, well, yeah, Fawn has your information. I don't know if you heard it. I'm sure you heard it. Tentatively, we hope the 13th.
Yeah.
but we're not quite sure because we're... Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay. Email.
Any other new discussion?
Well,
discussion?
Solid waste is on here. I feel like MANA should... just a brief update, but I feel like you, I didn't make the last Solid Waste Disposal Commission meeting because, not to give up an excuse for myself, but I've had to miss multiple soil and water meetings for Solid Waste, and I finally I said I have to go to one. I mean, there are requirements, but also I just felt I was letting the board down, so I had to go.
In one sentence, and that is that... we are plowing through the document, refining it, and then when the document is in some shape, we're going to send it around for input before, you know, it goes, I think, for the legislature, for the Supervisors Association, for the RRA, and there'll be a period of input. That's why we asked for 3 months more.
Which is quickly coming up.
Yeah, and then, you know, Hector's had family emergencies, and Carl Chipman also had a family emergency. So the worker bees keep meeting and taking it another step further, another step further. Does anybody...
No.
After we adjourn.
So we have a motion. Trace the same board tells the lap second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Aye.